For those of you who are already here, I have put in a suggested article that Haymitt recommends we read. It's The Root of All Suffering in the World is Ignorance. And I haven't read it yet, but it looks like it's about even dealing with life right now in the COVID-19 pandemic. So you can just click on that link. You can, like, copy and save it to your computer or somewhere where you can access it later. It's on the FPMT website. And also added on or somewhere where you can access it later. It's on the FPMT website. And also added on the Kadampa Center website under the Wisdom of Emptiness materials is a resource list that Haymitt put together as well. So that's posted there as well, with lots of good links as well as books. So definitely check that out. And it looks like to me it's 7 o'clock. So we'll go ahead and get started. I do have just a reminder, update about next module. So this is our last class of Wisdom of Emptiness. So this is our sixth class of six. And then we're going to have a 1 week break next week. And then we will pick up with our very last module of this 2 year series. It's flown by. I can't believe it's been 2 years. And so on November 2nd, I think it is. Yes, Monday, November 2nd, we start Introduction to Tantra. Don Brown will be leading us in the first and in the fourth. There's only four classes for that module. So Don Brown will be our instructor for the first and the fourth module. And then we have a very special guest I mentioned last week, Venerable George Chernoff will be joining us for the middle two. And he will be here not only for those two Discovering Buddhism classes, but he will be here virtually teaching from Monday, November 2nd, all the way to the 30th. Oh, wait, no, hang on. Those are Tantra dates. I don't have his exact date. Oh, November 9th. Sorry. Venerable George Chernoff will be here from November 9th through the 22nd. And in addition to teaching those two Discovering Buddhism classes, he will also be teaching on the Heart Sutra and transforming problems. So it all ties in together with what we've been learning through the modules, the most recent modules in Discovering Buddhism. So be sure to check out that schedule online at kadampacenter.org, kadampa-center.org. Okay, and without further ado, I'm going to turn it back over to Haymitt.
Okay. Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you so much. Yes, those resources are the books I have used. Some of them are required books if you were to have a bookstore and or have if you own one. Also, some of the books that have helped me a lot, and I find them very authentic, very, very beautiful. And this is not that you need to read through every one of them, but these are some great resources. I find myself many times just referring to them, and chapter here, chapter there. Sometimes I'm meditating and I have a question, and then I'll start looking through it and I find an answer there, or I'll go to Geshe La. But it's been a process for me over the last several years now, because not only I'm teaching this program, but I really wanted to fully understand what is the answer to some of the questions that I had. And I would hope that you also find yourself doing that. And so with that, we'll start our class. And so this is again our last module, session six. I will provide a good summary of everything, and some things will fly by quickly because I've repeated them several times. I do find from Geshe La, I have learned that often when we repeat, a week goes by and some things kind of go away. But when you repeat and hear several times, then some things stick. And so I find it very helpful, and I hope it is helpful to you. And with that, we should start by always doing three prostrations. If you're on the floor and you want to do it, great. If you're seated on a chair and want to do it mentally, that is perfectly fine. And again, remember, we are not bowing down to anybody. Okay, this is not about anything like you're taking something and you're bowing down to. You are respecting the teachings and you are humbling yourselves. You are developing good qualities by being humble. And it also brings your mind to this time and moment, and so we can learn with an open mind and heart. So again, based on your comfort level, I will just do 3 prostrations mentally and then we'll get going, okay? Om Namo Manjushri Namo Sushri Manjushri Om Namo Manjushri. Thank you. Okay, as usual, let's bring ourselves mentally here, okay, with a short breathing meditation. So let's see if I can. Give me 1 second. There we go. You want to remove all distractions that you may have. Let's keep your back straight. That's the most important. Depending on how you're seated, again, comfortable. If you're seated on the floor, you want to have a full lotus position or vajra position. Arms are relaxed on your side. And then your thumbs are touching, your hands, right hand on top of your left hand. And your thumbs are touching each other. Your head is slightly tilted forward. Jaw and mouth relaxed. Okay. Tongue touching on the top palate of your mouth behind the teeth. And your eyes are slightly open. Okay. What you're going to do is start focusing on your breath. Again, we choose breath because it has no picture, no appearance. It is neutral and we breathe every day. It also sets you up for creating concentration. Okay? So for each inhalation and exhalation, simply keep your attention on the breath, on a rhythmic cycle in and out. Don't try to control your breathing in any way. Just let it come and go naturally. And continue to keep your mind on the breath. If your mind starts to wander, gently bring it back to your breath. Now, with a calmer state of mind, let's set our intention or motivation. So, we have finally reached the last session. Remember our discipline that at the start of each session, we remind ourselves to establish the motivation that will obtain the most beneficial result of the efforts we exert here. This also serves as a reminder to you all that please make all efforts to set a strong and meaningful intentions prior to your practices going forward. So listen to this presentation in order to achieve supreme enlightenment like that of Sakyamuni Buddha, so that you will be a perfect cause for the happiness of all living beings pervading space and time. This is a lifetime practice and where you go from here. listen to many teachings on emptiness from qualified teachers, and study authoritative texts on emptiness. You really have to know the perspective of the teacher on this subject. There are many points of view on this subject, and it is important to know which one of these teachers is presenting. Also, the books on emptiness written by authors who are widely accepted, its authorities on the subjects are the best choices for your study. However, it is difficult to read these books in their original language. Consequently, we rely on translations. Further, it is not likely that you will find a translation of one of those classics without some commentary supplied by the translator. There are interpretations that claim permission from the authors of these classics, or at least from the scholars of those books who have demonstrated a beneficial understanding that anyone on the path to liberation and enlightenment would want to have. Among this oral traditions are those that provide credible legitimacy to their claims of being true heir to the understanding of the authors or realized scholars of those authors. So try your best to study a classic from someone who holds one of the authentic oral traditions, and hopefully that teacher teaches you in the language, in your language, or has equally skillful interpreter. Thank you. Okay, so today I intend to go through a high level summary of this profound subject of emptiness. We've gone through a lot of material, a lot of logic, a lot of material, a lot of examples. I think, again, I would like to say that in back of your mind, take few things at the core of it. Why are you learning emptiness? How is it stated again and again and again that this is the way to cut the root of all the problems, which is ignorance? We've gone through all that, and we'll cover it in a nice way again to reemphasize those points today. But at all times going forth, it doesn't have to be sitting for hours and going through books and books and books, but even little things you do in life, when walking, when exercising, when working, you can bring snippets of these things in your mind and just see how you see things, okay? And we'll help you. So we'll go through that today a little bit. Okay, and then we'll end with a little few lines on that this is a lifetime practice. We'll review the homework questions that I had given you last time, and then we'll go through the resource list, and then we'll meditate, do a meditation on the selflessness of phenomena, and then we'll dedicate. That's the intent of the class today, okay? Okay, so let's start. This is just to give you the purview of what we've covered without going, I haven't provided a lot of details here, just the top level topics that we covered. There were many, many subtopics underneath each of these. However, just to give you an idea of the knowledge that we've all learned from this, including me, because I have to also read and look at these things again and again and again. So it's really helpful to me also. So hopefully this has been helpful to you. So we, for session one, okay? So this just gives you an idea of what we went through. So very high level session one, obviously we had introductions of the lineage teachings. I introduced you, we had a video and we introduced you to two books that talks a little bit about the subject matter, the course history, right? And good to know again that the lineage is so important in this. Course history and the lineage is important because it comes from Buddha. This is not something somebody sat down and made it up. It comes from Buddha. And we talked about how his teachings were organized. Okay. We also learned about all the masters, mainly Nagarjuna, Chandrakirti, Dharmakirti, Lama Tsongkhapa. You've heard of Santideva. We do it all the time in dedications. And then some other names you should be familiar with. You'll come across these, and I think it's important for you to know that you're following the footsteps of these great masters. Let's see. Here's what Nagarjuna had said, but before that, let me just give you a brief couple of points about that. Again, Buddha taught, he had what would they call the three turning of the wheels. When he came out of enlightenment, the very first one in Sarnath, Deer Park, India, he taught the four noble truths. The second one, the second turning, what they call, was at this vulture peak where he taught Heart Sutra, the wisdom of emptiness. Okay, and the third one basically was authenticating the both teachings. Okay, so that's what they call the three wheels of Dharma. Again, Buddha's teaching were organized in various ways. The three baskets we went through, the teachings of the discipline, the teachings of discourses or sutras, and lastly Abhidharma or knowledge. So these were the two baskets. We also talked about that the two major pieces in Buddhism, we see the universal vehicle and the individual vehicle. And we talked about Mahayana, which we follow. The universal vehicle is more towards the compassionate side of family, where we want to become enlightened to benefit others. Individual vehicles are also want to liberate themselves. Both are absolutely necessary. So not one is better or worse. It is just the package, okay? Just so you understand. Again, authenticating that this comes all the way from Buddha to Nagarjuna to us. And here's just the beginning of the slide where Nagarjuna, who was not only was widely accepted, his views were widely accepted. He wrote many, many books. He upheld teachings of perfection of wisdom. He clarified perfection of wisdom discourses. He became an abbot of Nalanda University, where a lot of the teachers come from. And then he wrote books such as Fundamental Verses of the Middle Way, 70 Verses of the Emptiness. Then he wrote The Precious Garland of the Middle Way, 60 Verses of Reasoning, Verses of the Heart, Heart of Dependent Arising, and so forth. So a lot of the teachings come from that. Okay? So be familiar with that. And if you are very interested in really deep diving, I would suggest to find Nagarjuna. Even if you do a Wikipedia lookup, you'll find a lot about him, and then you'll see all the references and the books he wrote, and then you can go from there. So that's just another way to look into what Nagarjuna had to say. Okay. Obviously, we also learned a lot about our lineage guru, Lama Tsongkhapa. He's the founder of the Gelug school. We belong to Gelugpa tradition. The word Gelug or Gelugpa, also known as the virtuous tradition, or the virtuous order. His Holiness also belongs to this particular tradition. It is the largest of all the four schools. The four schools, just for knowledge sake, are Gelug, Nyingma, Kagyu, and Sakya. And they all have little lineages and all that. And it's very interesting to know about them. We learn from each other all the time about different things. It's just same things, just looking at it from different various ways. Okay, so be familiar with that. We talked about how Lama Tsongkhapa consulted with Manjushri. Manjushri is the Buddha of wisdom. Okay? And so how he was such a highly attained yogi that he was able to communicate directly with Manjushri. Just think of the attainment. Okay? And I think at this point, we also introduced you to two definitions, one of bodhicitta. Because we talk about developing bodhicitta. But when somebody asks, what is bodhicitta? We kind of know it in the mind, but we can't express it. And it's important to know. It's the principal consciousness that combines the two factors of wishing to free all beings from suffering and wishing to attain enlightenment in order to achieve that. So you want to become enlightened. That's your goal. Why? So you can benefit all. Okay? And then, what is your pathway? You become a bodhisattva before you become a Buddha. And a bodhisattva is one who possesses bodhicitta fully. Okay? So it's good to know those things sometimes. Yeah. Oops. And then session two, we went through the 12 links, the Wheel of Life, just barely introduced Heart Sutra and its importance. And then since we talk about getting rid of ignorance, we needed to know a little bit more about ignorance. We talked about the three principal aspects of the path from Lama Tsongkhapa. And then we did a meditation transition of awareness during death. Okay, so those are the things we covered in session two. Again, just for your knowledge, it is an explanation. These 12 links are the explanation by Buddha, Sakyamuni Buddha, when he got up from his meditation and was awakened. You know, this is his way of explaining how the delusion and karma bind sentient beings to samsara, causing them to be reborn into suffering again and again and again. Again, samsara is this birth and death cycle again and again and again. We fall into this trap all the time because of craving and grasping. Okay, and it all starts from ignorance. Again, this topic is emptiness. And why don't we see reality the way it exists? Because there is ignorance. Okay, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but at least this. And it was interesting that when you take a look at this pictorially, it is depicted in the Wheel of Life, right? And this is a picture you see at Kadampa Center. When you come next time, right at the entrance door to the Gampa, you will see this beautiful picture. Many times you see this in many other Gampas. And again, this is the Wheel of Life, represents the cycle of birth and rebirth and existence in this samsara, this birth and death cycle. Again, just for a quick overview, the image at the hub are the three poisons. The three poisons are ignorance, attachment, and aversion. And the second layer, it represents karma, okay, of body, speech, and mind. The third layer represents the six realms. The upper realms are on the top, the lower realms are on the bottom. And then, of course, the fourth layer represents the 12 links that keeps us circling through this birth and death cycle, samsara. The fierce figure holding the wheel represents impermanence. The moon on the top left represents liberation from cyclic existence. And the Buddha on the right is saying, is pointing, and he says, indicates liberation is possible, showing the way. Very nice picture. Again, a brief introduction was given to you on Heart Sutra. Again, this is to emphasize the profound nature of this subject matter, the Heart Sutra. Okay? And it's the heart of the wisdom of emptiness. That's why it's called the Heart Sutra, the main points. And we'll go through that very quickly of the slides it covers. It was written in many verses, but if you bring it down to its very small mantra, the Tayata Om Gate Gate Paragate Parsamgate Bodhi Soha. And it just means Tayata, meaning slain, just like that. Gate means gone. Gate Gate gone, gone. Paragate beyond gone. Parasamagate gone to the further shore. Bodhi awakening. Soha, so be it. Okay? So it's a very powerful mantra. If you understand emptiness and when you learn and apply and meditate on it, when those thoughts are formulating in your mind, this mantra is very helpful to understand the nature of reality. Okay. Oops. Obviously, we've been thinking about cutting the root of the problem, right? So the word ignorance pops up many, many ways. Okay. And so again, this is the root of cyclic existence is not a mere lack of knowledge. We always say he's ignorant of that, she's ignorant of this. That's not the ignorance we are talking about. It is an active misconception about the way things exist. Okay. Obviously, there are external conditions, internal conditions, and strong emotions associated with this ignorance. And we talked about how especially strong emotions and internal conditions, if you're sick, you don't think properly. If you have strong emotions, you can generate love or hatred or anger. All of those things are part of that knowing or unknowing, okay? And then Buddha says that he taught that we should use our faculties to develop a conviction in the possibility of achieving liberation and enlightenment. It is not mere knowledge of reading a book. You should have some conviction and no doubt that you want to absolutely reach this point, okay? Take a journey, okay? And liberation depends on what? Removing ignorance. and gaining wisdom. Okay, so you remove ignorance, you gain wisdom of emptiness. Okay? And so some people might think it's hopeless. I can't understand this. But if you've done your readings, clearly it says that don't give up. It is simply delusion to think that way. Okay? You can do it. This has always inspired me. And so today, I'm going to do something very clearly. I'm going to read something for you. So just kind of do a quick meditation on what is are the three principal aspects of the path. It's renunciation, emptiness, and bodhicitta. These are the three things. But I'm going to do a little reading. And I just want you to open your mind. And this is what Lama Tsongkhapa wrote. And just listen to it, okay? So it says, expressing the homage, I bow down to my perfect gurus. Always starts with the gurus and thanking them. The essential meaning of this victorious one's teachings, the path praised by all holy victors and their children, the gateway of fortunate ones desiring liberation. This I shall try to explain as much as I can. Okay. Then he is persuading to listen. Those who are not attached to the pleasures of circling samsara, who strive to make freedom and endowments meaningful, talking about freedom and endowments of precious human life that we have, who entrust themselves to the path pleasing the victorious ones, you fortunate ones, listen with calm mind. So here we go. The purpose of generating renunciation without the complete intention, definitely to be free from circling. There is no way to pacify attachment, seeking pleasurable effects in the ocean of circling. Also, by craving for cyclic existence, embodied beings are continuously bound. Therefore, at the very beginning, seek renunciation. Freedom and endowments are difficult to find. That means precious human life. And life has no time to spare. By gaining familiarity with this, attraction to the appearances of this life is reversed. By thinking over and over again, meditation, that actions and their effects are unbetraying, and repeatedly contemplating the miseries of cyclic existence, attraction to appearances of future lives is reversed. The definition of having generated renunciation, when by having trained in this way, there is no arising, even for a second, of attraction to perfections of cyclic existence, and all day and night, the intention seeking liberation arises, then thought of renunciation has been generated. Now, we're going to go to mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta. Okay? Even if renunciation has been developed, if it is not possessed by the mind of enlightenment, it does not become cause of the perfect bliss of unsurpassed enlightenment. Therefore, the wise generate the supreme mind of enlightenment. Swept away by the current of the four powerful rivers, tied by the tight bonds of karma, so hard to undo, caught in the iron net of self-grasping, completely enveloped by total darkness of ignorance, endlessly reborn in cyclic existence, ceaselessly tormented by three sufferings, thinking that all mothers are in such conditions, generate supreme mind of enlightenment. Now I'm going to jump one paragraph and we're going to go to the emptiness. The reason to meditate on right view. Without the wisdom realizing ultimate reality, even though you have generated renunciation in the mind of enlightenment, you cannot cut the root cause of circling. Therefore, attempt the method to realize dependent arising. You should be familiar with these words now. Okay, dependent arising. Showing the right view. One who sees the cause and effect of all phenomena. Of both cyclic existence and state beyond sorrow as forever unbetrayed. And for whom any object trusted in by grasping mind has completely disappeared, has at the time entered the path pleasing Buddha. If the appearance of dependent relation, which is unbetrayed, is accepted separately from emptiness, and as long as they are seen separately, then one has still not realized Buddha's intent. If these two realizations are happening simultaneously without alteration, and from merely seeing dependent relation as completely unbetraying, that definite ascertainment comes that completely destroys the way all objects are apprehended as truly existent. At this time, the analysis of ultimate view is complete. Furthermore, appearances eliminate the extreme of existence, and the emptiness eliminates the extreme of non-existence, the middle way. If you realize how emptiness manifests in the manner of cause and effect, then you are not captivated by wrong notions holding extreme views. In this way, you realize exactly the vital points of three principal aspects of the path. Resort to seeking solitude, generate the power of effort, and quickly accomplish your final goal, my child. I have been always been attracted to these teachings, and it just puts so many things in perspective. So, okay, so that's your three aspects of the path. Again, we went through some good examples, right? And we went through four-point analysis, just an introduction to the first point, and then we went through some of the examples and then meditation on I. Okay, in the four-point analysis, nothing major here. Everybody's kind of familiar with this now. We've gone through it. Again, this is a logical way of looking at things. And why it's this way? So that we're not making up things. We have to identify, first of all, what is it that we are refuting? You know, when I say I may not even know what I'm talking about. So first identify what is that I, that inherent existent I, that is independent, that we think is there all the time. That big I is what we are talking about. We must identify that. And that's the object. So first you recognize it. Oops, sorry. The second point, deciding that if the person existed in this way, it is misconceived and must be findable. Maybe it is a body-mind thing. It's in my mind. Maybe it's in my body. And we know it's not in the body. Maybe it's in my mind. And so we think that way. So then we look upon it and see, let's find it. Is it in relationship to our aggregates, which means form, mind, right? Form, feeling, discrimination, all of those things, mental activities and consciousness. And we notice that we have five aggregates and of which we have many mental factors. I cannot exist in each one of those. Would be many eyes. So it's not findable. Then it must be independent of that. And you go through that and you see that it does not exist. And therefore, we don't exist independently, inherently. Okay? Dependent. We are dependent arising. You got to think through this. It needs to settle in your mind. And none of these things come immediately. We kind of say, yeah, okay, it's not there, but I got to still function. You got to think all of those through and very clearly in your mind. Okay, what is it that functions? How do we exist? Okay, or do not exist, both. It was important we use these examples just quickly. You know, candle flame was used just to give you cause and effect type of thing and thinking how moment to moment things change, just like we do. We think we are permanent, but we are changing every moment, just like that flame. The flame in prior moment to this particular flame you're looking at was different than the flame you're looking at. That one ceased and this one started. This one will cease and another one will be there. It looks to us that it's always there, but every moment is a different moment. Then we looked at cup, okay? And we looked at cup from the cup that you drink tea or coffee or water out of. And then we looked at it differently. And we also remember that this is a name. And what we were talking about here were that how conventions work. We call it a cup, we title it a cup, but there are many cups. We don't see them, it's just a word. We need to have conventions to talk with each other. So we have this. So a real cup exists in front of me. However, there are cupness that is not there in the cup. It is just a name conventionally given to this object so that we can talk with each other. So we talked about that. Harry Potter was an easy one. Again, how we create reality based on concepts. But this was easy because we use another concept called fiction. As soon as I say the word fiction, you know it's not true. And see how immediately, but yet, an author can go create a movie and there it is. It's very real. Walking, talking, residing in England, knows what he wears, and we create this entire phenomenon in our head, just conceptualize it, but it does not exist from its own side. Totally fiction. Then we got detail in the cup that neither we looked at the cup, but then we say, oh, the cup is made up of sand, ceramics, goes into particles, atoms, and goes on and on. So are the particles cup or is the sand cup? Same thing like looking for eye. In the end, we find that things are dependent origination. Conventionally, we call it a cup, but it does not exist from its own side. So there is no cupness in the cup. Okay, that's just another way. And why are these examples important? It is just showing you with different examples how habituated we are to see things concretely. And this just breaks that a little bit. It kind of slaps us a little bit, says, now look at it from different angle, guys, in how words and ideas and concepts create these things in front of us. And we forget that everything is dependent arising, right? And rainbow is my favorite one. It's easiest one. You look at rainbow, we see a rainbow, nothing wrong with that. That phenomena exists. So there you go, rainbow exists. However, when you deeply look at it, it also is dependent origination, right? It is arising from moisture and heat and sunlight and so forth, but there's a rainbow. Okay, another one, example of koan, again, a sound consciousness is important to know. Lama Zopa Rinpoche would say something gibberish or something crazy, and you would have people sitting there and see their reactions. And then you would ask, you didn't like that, did you? And he says, what didn't you like? The vowels, maybe A, E, I, O, U, or maybe it was consonants. What part of that you didn't like? And then later on, he would say, it was all in your mind and you were blaming me. Another way to show how even sound and how we create concepts and aha, that wasn't a good thing. That was a bad thing. We create all kind of exaggerated views. So it's another example. And then we went to tanka. Tanka is made of a brocade. But if you were to take a painting and put it into a frame, would that be a tanka anymore? No, again, a title and a name and a label given to a piece of tanka, right? And then countries and boundaries are very obvious. We create that in Google Maps, we create that in maps and atlases, but the insects and birds, for example, don't know that this is Mexico and this is the United States. They just mosey on in, right? It's just concepts. We create that, it has meaning, that we create meaning behind it, and conventionally this is how we create our finite borders and stuff like that. Again, all different examples to show you how we consistently see things through concepts. But if you really look at it carefully, they don't exist on their own self, correct? So good enough. And that leads to a little explanation before I go into this level. Oh, again, let me explain you what a conventional truth is. Conventional truth is our agreed upon identification of things and how they work. And this understanding directs our worldly activities, right? We do that. But it is a little deceptive. We saw those in an example, how we see versus what they truly are. Objects appear as distinct or concrete entities when they are not. Okay, phenomena are mistakenly perceived and conceptualized as self-established. This is the root issue and the cause for suffering. This ignorance is the cause of me, mine, this, that, this pleases me, I don't like that. Why? Because we see I that way, concretely existing. But through examination and analysis, the middle way school, or called Madhyamika Prasangika school, phenomena, the way things, phenomena are not self-created, but arise in dependence upon conditions and causes and conditions, not from their own essence. Just remember that, just like rainbows. Okay, and then we went into four-point analysis. Again, in details, we talked a little bit about dependent arising. We talked about, again, summarize dependent arising, and then we had some review questions. So again, quickly, I'm not going to go through it. We've already covered it. So dependent arising, we talk about that all the time, and we talked about, it's just given the name in those days, King of Reasons, because people used to always give something a name, nothing much than that. And we went into some examples again of the cup, and the cup is repeated a couple of times. And then we said there were three types of, anyways, dependent arising, the way to learn it. Again, the logic was applied. The logic is given for a structure to again provide key to understanding things, and then it demonstrates what the outcome is. So that's why every time we went through that, there was always some logical explanation. And that we always said that things dependent on causes and conditions, a product is a reason for cause and condition, its parts and words and concepts. That's dependent arising. And the example was given of a blade of grass. A blade of grass is not the cause for blade of grass. The seed was the cause. Blade of the grass itself is not it, right? In other words, it's not the cause. It's not its own cause. It came because of dependent arising. Then we labeled it blade of grass, right? So whatever product is, it does not inherently exist. It depends on causes. That was another way of explaining. We look at car. It does not independently exist from its parts. We just label those parts. We put it together. We call it a car to conventionally talk with each other. If you were to further look into even those parts, they come from other parts. It goes on and on and on, right? So that there is no other possibilities. That's how things come together, right? And so we know whatever is made of parts does not inherently exist. So car is just a label. There's no carness in that car except its parts and causes and conditions, and we label it a car. Okay? And then words and concepts. We already know Harry Potter is a good example. So whatever is made up of words and concepts, they don't truly exist. So how is person different? Same. We are a product of causes and conditions. We came from a parent, right? And think about all the causes and conditions, and we are born. And then we are composed of parts. We have body parts, body, mind, and then they have parts, and with many parts, we have the same situation. And then we are construct of words and concept. You know, talk about tall, hot, tall, handsome, beautiful, pretty, names we give to people, fat, ugly, whatever we want to do, all of these things are concepts. But we are also dependent arising. What does that mean? That means we exist, but we don't exist independently. We are also part of the process of dependent arising, like all phenomena is. So whatever is dependent arising necessarily does not inherently exist. The person does not inherently exist because it is dependent arising. What exists is what we perceive through these concepts. So there is something, but we give label, concretize it, there it is. So that's how we continue moment to moment. Okay. Again, wanted to make sure you understand this is not mere faith. Okay? This is logical thinking. It is taught by reasoning. It applies if you are a Buddhist or non-Buddhist. Okay? It does not matter. Even those are titles and naming conventions. But think about it. What a powerful teaching Buddha gave. Okay? And then we talk about some obstacles. The biggest obstacles to understanding these things is that we hold on to our concepts too strongly. We hold them so tightly, and then we become rigid and inflexible, right? And then what happens? Then we create misunderstanding. I don't like you because we have a concept of you as not good. Or I love you because you're so good and you please me. We start all these things because we're rigid. Just think, it allows some space to act. Lama Yeshe says that. Emptiness makes the space to act. Just loosen up a little bit and see how things are. We create all these concepts so rigidly. Very nice way of putting it. Gives little reality to it, in my view, in conceptually in this world. Okay. Then we went through the five Mahayana paths. We had the heart. We went into detail of the Heart of Perfection of Wisdom Sutra, and then we talked about. You saw that beautiful video from Dr. Thupten Jinpa, who is the translator for His Holiness. And he brought into perspective why it says form is empty and emptiness is form, right? He heard that very clearly. It talks about form is empty, from does not exist inherently. However, he brings some reality back. We're not refuting the phenomena of existence. We are refuting how it exists inherently. So it brings you back in the middle again a little bit. So he talks about that a little bit. So again, those five paths, important to know that when you look at the Heart Sutra, we'll quickly go through the slides. I'm keeping an eye on the time. That the Heart Sutra is written in such a way, you have the prologue, right? You have the common prologue and then the uncommon prologue, and it tells you it describes the place, who is sitting there, who is visiting there. Then it gets into the body of the Heart Sutra. The five paths are path of accumulation, okay, path of preparation. Path of accumulation is realization arising from hearing and contemplating the teaching of the Wisdom Sutra, or the perfection of wisdom teachings. Path of preparation is realization arising from the meditation on the teachings of these wisdom teachings. Then path of seeing, you're starting to meditate now. Then you start to directly see a non-conceptual way of realizing emptiness. You start to see how things are. You start to see. Then you reach this path of meditation, complete unification of mind, completely one-pointed meditation. It's samadhi, that's what it means, one-pointed meditation. Okay, and you have direct realization of emptiness. At that point, this is the last stage of a sentient being, basically, in the way we see it. Their mind is now becoming Buddha. And they become Buddha, omniscient. They know all. Completely and fully understanding of emptiness. Okay? And there's no more learning. It's amazing that this sutra goes through these steps, step by step. I'm not going to go through details, just to give you a visual of what we went through. We read those words in the sutra itself. We explain what it means, and it tells you how it's associated with path of accumulation and preparation, with the meanings of each of those paths. There are many resources. I have some wonderful books available. Essence of the Heart Sutra. There's one from His Holiness. If you're really interested in nailing each and every little word down, there's also commentary we posted in the resource library there. You may want to take a look at that. Then we go through, of course, Path of Seeing, and that is the third piece, which is again, direct non-conceptual realization of emptiness. I think there was another second piece, I missed it. Here was the second piece, and then this is the third piece. These are called qualities, that in emptiness, there is no causes per se, because even those causes have previous causes. It's trying to show you dependent arising. Everything is just there the way it is, and it's because of causes and conditions and all that. So it's just saying everything is unproduced, unseized, stainless, without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. It's just the way phenomena is. And you're meditating, so obviously that's how you see things. And then ultimately you reach the path of meditation. And when it says no mind, no element, no mental consciousness, what they're saying is when you are in that state of one-pointed meditation, these things don't appear. You're not conceptualizing anything. You have a non-conceptual direct vision of emptiness, how things exist. Okay? Sorry. And then path of no more learning. And then the last part is again confirming that Buddha himself wakes up and says, well done, my son. This is the way. It is like that. Well said, my son, son of lineage. It is like that. It is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom just as you have indicated. And all the thus gone by, all the realized beings rejoice. So that tells you this is an affirmation of emptiness and the teachings of emptiness. Okay, I reminded you throughout the class that always keep these in your mind? Why are you learning this? How is it helping you? What does it mean to you? Okay? Remember how things exist. Ultimate reality. Okay? You also call it shunyata. If you're looking from outside, if you look inside, you can call selflessness, egolessness, all these words. Okay? Need to know emptiness to eradicate fundamental confusion of ignorance. Ignorance not knowing how things exist. Okay? Which when we have in this birth and death cycle, we create this, we develop this ignorance. We don't see things the correct way. This causes so many problems, right? Many times mentioned me, mine, I, starts from there. Attachments, aversions. And we must eliminate and develop love and kindness instead. And then you become enlightened. And last teachings, last class, we talked about how things are dependent arising, same as emptiness. It's just different ways of looking at it.
Amen.
Yes.
Naga has requested that we go back to the slide, the one before the path of seeking.
Yeah.
Naga, did you have any questions or do you just wanted to see it again?
I can provide this to Naga if she needs it.
Yeah, I just when I was taking pictures, I got all of them.
Okay.
Thank you.
So this is your heart sutra, and then you rejoiced. Again, please realize how profound this subject is and how it impacts your life. And that's the whole idea of Buddha's teaching. So you want to be enlightened, he's given you a major key. Okay. These are some meditations we went through. And the last one we'll go through today. We did cultivation of concentration. We did transition of awareness during death. We did meditation on the eye. We did the four-point analysis of the eye. I also walked you through the emptiness by Venerable Rene Fuse, right, which everybody liked so much. And today we'll go through selflessness of phenomena. Okay, because we've already identified, okay, I'm going to humble myself. I independently does not exist, but we also see other things outside in phenomena as concrete. So this is a good way to end this session, to look at phenomena as empty of inherent existence. I would like to at least mention a few words, and then we will close very quickly and talk about those questions and answers for 10 or 15 minutes and then go into meditation. Okay, this is a lifetime practice. Okay, I'm giving you a good example. And what I would say is, first of all, as you read, think about it. Think about these readings. Think about what you're trying to learn and why. Don't start with this complication view of your mind. Oh my gosh. Start slow. Try to take it in, filter it. Matter of fact, I would even suggest not to read entire books. Just read a paragraph or two. You're busy in the morning. You're about to go, you're going to do your practice. Pick up a couple of words, a paragraph or two. Think about it. And another thing they suggested is talk to your friends, not at least people who you are familiar with or understand the subject matter. Otherwise, they think you're on some sort of medicine, you know. So you want to talk to them, but verbalize it. Because we think these precious teachings and we understand it mentally. But when you verbalize it, let me tell you, it's bizarre. It sounds so strange. You're not able to articulate it sometimes. It helps you. It helps you. And then the responses you get will again make you think, oh, I wonder what that person asked me that for. What does that mean? Why did that person ask me that question? You may have the same question. You never thought of it. Right? So sometimes amongst friends, amongst Dharma buddies, amongst people who are interested, you may want to have discussions. Okay? Let's see what else. You vocalize them and get an honest feedback, right? So this is the practice you learn on a regular basis. You meditate on it. You talk about it. You think about it. You know, this is not something you're going to pick up two books and say, I got it. You got to incorporate it. Okay. You can intellectualize it. Certainly we are going through it right now and your mind is already visualizing, but those are appearances. when you start to directly see emptiness, you start to, you see your little hairs will pop up if you have any. You know, you'll get excitement inside. I've seen people actually have tears in their eyes once you sense it with your heart. So wonderful subject to ponder on. Then, of course, in the end, you must meditate on it. Okay? Deepen your understanding. Okay, any questions on meditation and what you should as a lifetime practice? Also, sometimes people think it's not getting in my head. I must be dumb. It's too much words. Too much for other, some people, the English words are confusing, you know? So don't think like that. What you do is you do some, gain some merits, do some purifications. You know, it's like this. When you want to set up a farm or a field, first you must clean the land, the soil, right? You must cultivate the land before you start planting the seeds. That's when it germinates. There's an example of even Lama Tsongkhapa. He was studying it. He was doing so many prostrations. He did mandala offerings, and he went into a recluse location, and he really, really, really did so many prostrations. And then he started thinking about Nagarjuna. He was thinking about Buddha Palita, all these people who wrote about emptiness. So he picked up a book written by Buddha Palita. He got a full, like all of a sudden it clicked. And he realized his understanding was upside down. And then here's Lama Tsongkhapa, who wrote so many books, memorized books. He summarized them, and he taught so many people. So again, an example that you must engage in such cultivation of the mind. Study alone is not sufficient. Okay? Just take a look at Lama Tsongkhapa. And so you must accumulate this merit. That this shows that through his merits and purification, he realized emptiness, and you can too. So just work on this slow and steadily. Try to understand this concept. And last but least, you must have some discipline, some ethics in your life. If you're learning emptiness and you're meditating on emptiness, but your life is full of unpeaceful states, your friend circle, things you watch, work, we all have that, right? We know how it occupies your mind, right? So you must think about that, how you can manage that. Like Geshe-la says so many times, go through like a fish in the pond, right? Or in the ocean, maneuver yourself very carefully. You know, see who you are associating with, see how many things you're, what you're watching all the times, see what you're reading. So allow some space, create a discipline, right? And focus on this subject matter, and you will see that you will gain more and more and more understanding, right? So you need a system of ethics in your own ways, okay? See what's coming in your life that is like an obstacle from learning these things, and then don't understand the importance of merit creating. Okay, so that's the most important piece. So lifetime of practice. You start any moment and all you do is accumulate. And guess what? You will see it. All right. With that, I want to go through the resource recommendations that Linda has so graciously already posted on the website. These are some of the books I read, and or I should say that honestly, I pondered through many times and read several of them, but I go through them as my resources, and I find them very, very helpful. And they're available in that link, so you can always download it, print it, and then as you are interested, you may want to start to see which ones may be impactful to you. Yeah, wanted to give you those resources. Okay. So first question was, who are some of the more famous teachers in our lineage of teachings on the wisdom of emptiness? Anybody wants to answer?
And feel free to unmute and contribute to these questions and answers. And I'm seeing some in the chat. We've got Nagarjuna, Chandra Kirti, maybe you should say the name.
Chandra Kirti.
Lama Sopa.
Yep.
Wonderful. Lama Tsongkhapa.
Check this out. Very nice.
Yay.
Right? But don't forget Buddha himself. Heart Sutra. Okay, main teacher. Okay, these are wonderful. Next question. What is emptiness? Just answer from your heart. Don't worry, okay? Nobody's judging you. Nobody's giving you any marks. Just, you've gone through this many, many times now. You should be able to at least articulate a sentence or two.
Lose your ignorance.
Okay. What else?
Let's see. Seeing that objects do not exist in the way we think was contributed by Karen.
Excellent. Both answers, great answers. This is what I would say.
John, go ahead.
One thought, what I had written down is emptiness is our response to ignorance and our wrong views, because we cannot simultaneously hold the right view and the wrong view in our mind at the same time. And that's because our existence is so colored with perceptions and biases that we need to remove as many of those judgments from our mind as possible. And concentrating on dependent arising and the fact that our single lifetime is one point on a timeline that extends in infinity behind us and infinity in front of us. And meditating on that is how we release our ego and our small-minded, self-centered view of ourself. And so using that voidness of our judgment of others and voidness of the separation of our self from others, we seek emptiness to create a space in our own mind and to create conditions that are ripe for the right view to come into our perspective.
Fantastic. Somebody's done some work here. So he spoke to the last part. You can elaborate further using explanation of dependent arising and how it relates to emptiness. So all these causes and effects, how we see things, phenomena, how we see I, how we see others, all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. And he gave us a way to get to it. But very nice, all answers, very good. But here's just a quick way, short answer. But all of those are very good points. This tells me that you have been reading and contemplating, which makes me very happy. And that's how we start. And then you challenge yourself. You may come across an obstacle and say, maybe this is not the way I should say it. But this is how you start. Wonderful, wonderful. So that was that. We answered that. What is ignorance?
We have Helen saying, not seeing that which exists or the way in which it exists. It's also the obstacle of liberation. Karen contributed, willfully seeing things as they do not exist, layering concepts on top of objects.
All right.
And Dennis, from who's streaming on YouTube, shared, we are born a blank slate. We learn words, then create ideas from these words.
Very
and
nice.
That may have been for emptiness rather than.
That's okay. That's okay. It's all part and parcel of all subject inclusively, right? Because of ignorance, we don't see emptiness. So it's all dependent. So this is good. It's a misknowledge of reality. It is a cause of cyclic existence. It is a cause of uncontrolled death and rebirth. It is also the cause of destructive emotions. It is a concept that adheres to the true inherent existence. Very nice. Very good.
And Matt added the cause of unhappiness and samsara.
Absolutely. Samsara, the first noble truth, is dukkha, suffering. So that is perfectly fine. Very good. Thank you, guys. That's so good. What does emptiness have to do with the liberation and enlightenment?
And again, feel free to unmute and say your answers if you don't want to type them. And folks on YouTube, you too can add comments into the YouTube chat box. There's a little bit of a delay on YouTube, which is why we're getting comments.
That's why maybe I speak before somebody already answers. I'll wait.
I had written that emptiness is how we pull the weeds of ignorance to prepare the soil that is our mind so that we can continue to plant those seeds of Dharma and the lessons that we've learned in order to grow right view. And accumulation of right view and replacing your wrong view are the stepping stones towards liberation.
That's a very beautiful answer, because it brings us to the middle, and I'll just make a comment on that. Because, you know, emptiness does not mean nihilism. Nothing exists. It's not a blank. Everything is blank. We see the word English word empty means empty of water, empty of tea. That's not what they're talking about. It just tells you empty of inherent existence. And sometimes I have to even visualize in my head, if I were to do vertical lines, there's a gaps in between, but if they were interweaved, I would have connection to everything. I have to kind of go through this process, and it's perfectly right that we are not refuting the phenomena. We're just refuting the way we see it as independent inherence. Nothing is that way. Everything is dependent arising. So very good point. That was a bringing us to the middle somewhere, because we hear the word empty, 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 empty. That means, then what is it? So it's a very good way to bring it back to the center. And that's what Heart Sutra says. Form is empty. Emptiness is form. So wonderful way of saying that. So that's very good. So here's the, anybody else?
Yeah, let's see here. Helen also added, we have to understand emptiness to liberate ourselves, the start of the path to enlightenment. And Max also added, without emptiness, concepts and phenomena will influence and taint our liberation.
All good answers, man. Very nice. This is a very short answer. All those answers can be added here. I just had to fit so many things in it. But the word antidote to ignorance kind of takes care of a lot of those things we just talked about. So thank you for those answers. Those are fantastic answers. Okay, next question.
Got the Heart Sutra.
The second part is a little tough part, but I'll just give you the answer here. Obviously, it is the Heart Sutra. It is the essence of the wisdom, because it is the most important of all wisdoms, as it is the path to liberation and enlightenment, assuring one's own and others' happiness. It is known as the heart of perfection of wisdom, the proper title. That's why it's called the Heart Sutra. Okay? It is the heart of the perfection of wisdom, the main point, right? It is the essence of the teachings. That's why it's called the heart. It's given the name Heart Sutra. Wonderful. What is dependent arising? How does the emptiness and dependent arising relate to one another? No takers?
I had written that dependent arising is the inseparability of I from the universe and the eternity that created the causes and conditions to create this body and this lifetime that we're in, which I was thinking that, you know, that's thinking about from this point backwards, and I thought that it would also be inseparable from the causes and conditions that we create moving forward, because there's an eternity after this.
Yeah, in the simplest way, you can say that dependent arising is how things exist, right? I mean, things are coming to everything compound. You look at light and rays, you can put any names and concepts, but we talked about how we create things out of concepts and ideas, thoughts. We also know things have parts, parts have parts. So we know that also. Remember the blade of grass. We talk about the cup. We talk about the rainbow, right? Cause parts, causes and conditions, and then we label it. We have concepts and ideas and thoughts, and that's how things exist. And if that, but however, if you really look at it, I just tell people, like, look at a tree, okay? And you can say, well, where does this tree come from? And you can say, well, it came from a seed. And they say, well, where does the seed come from? From a fruit, maybe, or a flower. Maybe, where does that come from? From another tree. You can go on and on and on. And if you break it down even further, you can go into atoms and particles and continuous cycle, right? And so dependent arising, everything, all phenomena is dependent arising. It is basically synonymous with emptiness. Things exist because of emptiness. If everything was frigid and solid, there would be no movement. There would be no changes. There would be no yearning. There would be no growing. So that's how you want to see it. So wonderful, very good answer. So anyways, I'll read this. Dependent arising is the fact that whatever exists is dependent on causes and conditions, parts, and designated by name and thought. The opposite of dependent arising would be absolute independence, not depending on those things. And if things truly were inherently existence, they would have to be absolutely independent. However, things are empty of inherent existence because they're dependent arising. Thus, emptiness and dependent arising are naturally related. Just a different way of explaining it. Thank you. Okay, so that was that. Name and describe types of meditation on emptiness and give an example. I'll just give this answer. There are many types, this can take you, there are many, many types of meditations. However, you can break it down into two major types, right? One is analytical, like the meditation on I. That would be analytical, you know, let's look for the I. Does it exist? Is it in the aggregates? Is it independent? What am I looking for? So you analyze it. You analyze phenomena that way. But once you analyze, you find yourself completely in this beautiful space of awareness. And then what you do is you do a placement meditation. Okay? So you can do analytical meditation and awareness meditation called placement meditation on that beautiful, nice, no concept, conceptual mind, and just in that state of mind. That's two ways to do meditation on emptiness. Okay? How are you going to realize emptiness? If you remember, I mentioned this several times, that if you're going to take a quiz in the FPMT, pay attention to those three words. And if you remembered and took your notes, you would know them, but I will say it here. You think about it at all times. Remember I told you, lifetime of practice, when you're walking, when you're reading, when you look at things, think about it now and then. Then you're already hearing now, right? You're taking classes and you go to other teachers. Hopefully you'll go to the next one and you'll hear Venerable Chernoff speak about this, okay? And so when you do these things, you are listening. When Venerable Rubina does a wonderful teachings on it, Keshala, two Sundays ago, talked about emptiness. He says, go look for it. Is it in the muscles? Is it in your, it's not there. Even how we label things, he talked about emptiness all the time. He's done some wonderful, very nicely. He explains it in a way it goes into your head so quickly. So Geshe-la talks about it. So you hear, you think about these concepts, you put it into your mind, start to see it, and you meditate on it. Must practice. This is when you will grow and come to your own answers. Okay? So those were some of the answers. And we're going to go into meditation. Oops. But before we go into meditation, I like to read something to you, and then which will lead right into the meditation. This is from His Holiness. We have 15 minutes. This will be perfect timing. There was a little I've taken an excerpt from His teaching, of the Holiness's teaching, given January 14th, 2019. It is called, In What Way is Consciousness Mistaken? Okay. And I've not taken the entire article. I've taken two major paragraphs that will put all of these things into a perspective of what we have learned. Okay, so just keep your mind open. You want to close your eyes, listen to it, and then we'll get into the meditation. Matter of fact, you can take your position of the meditation right now and just listen to it. So part of the three ways of learning: hearing, thinking, and meditation. Okay, so here we go. It says, because all phenomena appear to exist in their own right, all of our ordinary perceptions are mistaken. Only when emptiness is directly realized during completely focused meditation is there no false appearance. At that time, the dualism of subject and object has vanished, as has the appearance of multiplicity. Only emptiness appears. After you rise from that meditation, once again, living beings and objects falsely appear to exist in an end of themselves. But through the power of having realized emptiness, you will recognize the discrepancy between appearance and reality. Through meditation, you have identified both the false mode of appearance and the false mode of apprehension. So, getting to the central point, all of us have a sense of I, but we need to realize that it is only designated in dependence upon mind and body. The selflessness that Buddhists speak of refers to the absence of a self that is permanent, partless, and independent, or subtly, it can refer to absence of inherent existence of any phenomena. However, Buddhists do value the existence of self that changes from moment to moment. Very important here. Buddhists do value existence of self that changes from moment to moment in dependence upon the continuum of mind and body. All of us validly have the sense of this I. When Buddhists speak of the doctrine of selflessness, we are not referring to the non-existence of the self with this I. All of us rightfully want happiness and do not want suffering. It is when we exaggerate our sense of ourselves and other phenomena to mean something inherently existence that's when we get drawn into many, many problems. Now we'll get into our meditation. I invite you to now just relax, contemplate the emptiness of selflessness of the phenomena. We already meditated on the selflessness of persons, which is the type of selflessness that we should first become acquainted with. However, we need to expand our understanding of selflessness by recognizing that everything is selfless. In the self here, meaning inherent existence. Nagarjuna said in his book, The Precious Garland, that if we only understand the selflessness of the person, but not the selflessness of phenomena, we will not have an antidote to attachment to the phenomena, as that attachment arises from the belief that things are inherently existent. Also, he said that the belief that the inherently existent person arises from the belief in the inherently existing body and mind. Some philosophers taught the selflessness of person, but asserted the true existence of phenomena like atoms, moments, awareness, production, and so forth. The Madhyamika Prasangika philosophers asserted the negation for persons as well as everything else. Our position, our Prasangika position, provides a very efficient way to meditate on both selflessness of person and the phenomena. You can use your understanding of selflessness of persons to understand the selflessness of everything else. You can meditate on the selflessness of the body by recalling your understanding of the selflessness of the person and think that the body too is empty of two existence because it is dependent arising just like the person. As your understanding becomes clearer, you can pause and your understanding to fully familiarize yourself with it. Simply stay there for a few minutes. When you complete your meditation session, remember that whatever appearance is, it's like rainbow or a conjuration of a magician. All of these things that appear as if they are concrete and abide in their own essence are in fact the appearance of interdependent origination. A good example, a fire circle that are created when you take a torch or a flashlight and you push it around. Or sparklers are another good one. You can make designs in the air at the night with sparklers, but these designs are not actually hanging there in the space. What is there, so to speak, is a bright light that you're moving rapidly. Everything that you perceive is like that. They are appearances of interaction of other things. We are able to differentiate these different appearances and conceive of them differently by providing them with different names and descriptions. But these appearances never achieve the status of being the thing that exists in its own right. Similarly, you can meditate on the selflessness of the mind by thinking that it too is empty of true existence, like the person, because it too is dependent arising. You can even extend this to karma and the Four Noble Truths. As mentioned in Heart Sutra, all possessions, your professions, your country, this planet, whatever you might be attached to and have unrealistic, exaggerated emotions for. If you would like to know more about different ways that selflessness can be presented, one recommended book is called Chandrakirti's Sevenfold Reasoning, Meditation on Selflessness of Persons. It's published by Library of Tibetan Works and Archives. There are many books now available that can advance your understanding of emptiness. Of course, it doesn't matter how many of these books you read or you own if you do not study them. The study of such books is an excellent way to meditate on emptiness, because these books present reasons to prove emptiness and provide ways to appreciate the reasons and the understanding of emptiness. Thank you.
Thank you, Hemant.
I hope this has given some insight to the topic of emptiness and how one can learn from it and how they can find resources. Our Geshe-la talks wonderfully about it, what a resource we have. I'm very thankful for all the teachers, that even the DB that have helped me and Geshe-la, and I really appreciate you guys participating. This is an amazing subject. So I'll hang on for conversations, questions.
Yeah, I am. I have a question, and it just keeps coming up for me. I can get the emptiness, like I can realize the emptiness of an object, that there's a physical thing that exists, but the idea that we place on that thing is just an idea. It just exists in our thoughts, and we all have different ideas about it and different concepts. But I can't really do that easily with a person, because it seems like there's a physical body, but there's more than that. There are also thoughts. There are actions that the person takes. There's growth that the person does. There's a seeker that's seeking enlightenment. There's a lot more to it than like saying, you know, there's a ship on the water and we call it a ship, and there is no ship. There's just a thing on the water. But with a person, I can't seem to get there. So, right.
I would say to you, Karen, I'm assuming that's the question coming from Karen. That's why they always say, start with the meditation on the eye and then think about how everything is labeled, even in this body. Now, remember from Rene Fussy's meditation, we talked about that when you destroy and crumble all these appearances from your mind, what is left behind is this mere eye, this phenomena. You are there. Is if you take your name out, body and parts and all that, there is still phenomena is not refuting the phenomena. That mere self exists. It's just moment to moment. It is not how we think concretely. They're not saying that you don't exist. Yourself does not exist. It's just that it is dependent arising. That phenomena still is there. That is the mere I that you can now develop bodhicitta. We talked about that a little bit. Again, this requires more reading and more understanding for you. I would suggest, of course, you can reread Looking for the I, how to also read Pabongka Rinpoche's book, you know, The Liberation in Palm of Your Hand. Starts with a page 590 something. Talks about quiescence of mind. So first you bring your position of meditation, then he talks about wisdom of emptiness. I think you need to contemplate more that we are not more than anything else. It's or less than anything else. These are all words, duality, less, more, high, low, light, dark. All these are concepts in relation to each other. Those are also concepts and thoughts. So, but your mind, moment to moment, works with you, right? Your thoughts. You exist in that subtle way. Even if you take all of these other things out, there's this nearness left in it. You can use that subtleness to then create all of the positive things that we are talking about. That self exists all the time. It's valid. It's just you don't exist independently. Just think about that for a moment, okay? You didn't just pop up like this. You are part. Causes and conditions are there. You are made up of parts. We talked about dependent arising. Thoughts are no different, cause and effect. This thought, this moment thought is different than the previous thought. That thought was different from a previous thought. There is cause and effect going on there too. They're consistently changing. You can take this moment at this time and change that to a positive. Always, that's what they call create merits. Because ultimately, whatever happens, it goes towards positive. That self is going to realize bodhicitta, and maybe that is now not grasping, not craving, and it may culminate into a bodhisattva to Buddhahood. So there is a fine line there, and you need to read more. There are ways they explain this in Nagarjuna's books. That's why they talk about, you know, we exist nominally by name, by concepts, but there is still that phenomena of existence. It's just that we name it and label it and we call it a concrete, and it is interdependent. It's a very fine line for our mind that is habituated to see things certain way to really understand that. It will challenge you, I guarantee you, and that's why they say meditate on it, think about it, read it again, find answers, talk to Geshe-la. I finally kind of sense it now, and I kind of have a feeling for it, but it took me a while, and I had to one time ask Geshe-la very clearly, what exists? I feel there's more to this than just that. And then he says, you exist. Self exists. However, you are not independent and concretely existing. It is interdependent. And then I read in our Venerable Fuxi's meditation, when the major I crumbles, the major ego crumbles, and you find you're left with this mere thought of beautiful calmness. Now put positive thoughts, create bodhicitta, create love. And that continues. That little I, that mere I, that self is valid I. Again, even in His Holiness's book, teaching, so that I just read, he says, let's return to the central point. All of us have a sense of I, but we need to realize that it is only designated on dependence upon body and mind. The selflessness that Buddhists speak of refers to the absence of the self that is permanent, partless, and independent, right? And what they're saying is, this was the key word. However, Buddhists do value the existence of self that changes from moment to moment, designated in dependence upon the continuum of mind and body. Those moments. Dependent arising is taking place. Your blood cells are changing. Your bones are changing. Your thoughts are changing. Everything that you own, you think you are there, but every part of your skin and blood cells and platelets and white cells and eosinophils are all changing at every moment. Millions of them are born and die on a very regular basis, every moment. It's all dependent arising. But this thought that you continue, that self-thought of self, that is there. And you can cultivate that to become enlightened. Now, that requires a little thinking. That requires a little more reading. That requires articulation in your own mind. How, why, where? That's why we say hear, think, meditate. I can say it many ways, but your mind has to be supple enough to say, I think I see that. I think I see that. Then it will capture it. I can tell you that from my own experience.
Yeah, this whole thing is... I guess I'm trying, it seems to me, this may not be in line with what is being taught here, but it seems to me, my experience, that there is a permanent existence that I have that has nothing to do with a person at all, that has to do with like an unchanging reality of love that exists in everything and pervades everything. And that's the real ultimate truth. And I don't know how to fit that into emptiness, but I do believe that emptiness is supposed to get me to that realization. So maybe I'm chasing after something that you're not trying to teach me.
Right. No, but you need to read more on how things exist then. You need to understand the phenomena. Everything is impermanent. Phenomena is impermanent and is dependent arising. This is the difference between people have questions on what is the soul versus not soul. Because it does not give you the identity of that I that is a permanent part of Karen that continues in that way, and Karen will be part of this. It's not like that. Every moment you are different. Every moment something is changing. You can only use that phenomena, and so there is no such permanent something hanging out there, according to Nagarjuna. Now, it requires more reading and understanding to see the differentiation between that. And we can talk further offline. Maybe I can point you to some readings and maybe a deep thinking of how I see it, you see it, and maybe we can have this discussion. That's why it's good to verbalize. It's good to talk, because these are the questions that will eventually tease you and make you understand what Nagarjuna meant by that. There are some wonderful books, Echoes of Voidness, for example, and also Nagarjuna's book that take you step by step into what it's negating and what it's not. So that's why they say middle way. Don't go into nothing and don't get into this solidness. That's all they're saying. Don't exaggerate of this me existing permanently somewhere. And I'm just working on that. You need to look at that very carefully and evaluate it and meditate on it and challenge it. And then maybe even maybe we can have that discussion, or even Geshe-la can explain you in a way maybe goes better in your mind, or if that's what how you want to think, that is, it's up to you.
Yeah. So when we take the Buddha versus Prince Siddhartha, like, I would think Prince Siddhartha is the person that doesn't actually exist at all, but the Buddha is what does exist eternally. Are we saying that's not what we're supposed to learn?
Buddha was born as a human, which we all, these are concepts. Human, Siddhartha, name, everything, he was a king. We know that. We all have conventionally things exist. We say things exist conventionally. They just don't exist inherently.
Okay.
He went through this stage of human life, and he realized he got enlightened.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He got enlightened. So his mind is enlightened. He's an enlightened being. You're not talking about the name. We only can associate that with a name historically, because we have to talk that this is what happened. That was a tree. This was the land. But in scheme of things, when you really look how things are, that tree was, you know, when you end sometimes in FPMT, they say, I dedicate this to the Buddha who's empty from his own side.
Right.
You say that all the time, because everything is interdependent. And yes, those Buddhas exist from their, you know, but again, you have to really understand what is that individual mere self that exists and that continues. But how we concretize it, so it's a very fine line to express it in words for me right now. However, I can see a very, very distinctly now what they mean by that all phenomena are empty of inherent existence. The Buddha that existed was inherently not existent, right? His mind, he took his mind and he found a way and he taught. And his body deteriorates. You don't see that Buddha. And that mind continues to become Buddha, and that teaching still lives. And that's all I can think in those terms. So he exists in that way. There are many Buddhas.
Mm-hmm.
There are millions of Buddhas. You can be a Buddha.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. Nobody's denying self. You exist. What is denying here is you don't inherently exist, that you are dependent arising. That's all. Nobody's denying that. There is no you. I mean, let's call you Karen right now. Karen exists. But just know that Karen is a name. And body is a part. But there is you still there. It is how we see things. That conventional phenomena still exists. Phenomena itself is not refuted. It's just telling you how it exists. And that's that fine line you've got to read more and meditate on.
I guess, because I feel like I understand everything you're saying, and I still feel like there's a lot of suffering and I shouldn't be having that suffering. And I also feel like the understanding of all these things that you're saying, which I really do think I understand intellectually, I also know that there's something a lot more that's this beautiful experience, and it's not getting me there. And so I feel like I'm missing something, even though I understand all your words. So I don't know.
But you're looking for something that you've not realized it, and you are conceptualizing what that may be.
No.
The best thing is if you take away the obstacles of all these things, you will be in that state of that what you're looking for, maybe. So maybe it is. We all have that. We all do this, right? I wish I will be a doctor. Maybe I can find peace. Maybe I'll have more money. Maybe there's this love out there. We all have these concepts in our mind, but you need to think in those terms that maybe Mina, there is, this is a step-by-step way to say there is that bliss, there is that happiness. We are all looking for that happiness. Even these are the holiness says we are all looking for no suffering and more happiness. And you can reach there. And this is the way to reach there. That's all they can give you. They can give you the path. But what that is and how you see it and how you feel it is your own experience. Mm. Right? It will be your own experience. And that's how I see it, at least.
Okay.
Okay, and we can talk further.
And Hemant, we do have one more question from Helen. Helen, first she says many thanks for this great course. And then she is asking, can you repeat the source of the quote regarding like a fish in the ocean? It was from Geshe.
No, it was Geshe-la who says many times.
Oh, Geshe-la.
But this examples are given throughout many readings I've done too, that in an ocean, how it maneuvers through very quietly without creating a lot of waves, and it's always watching out. That's how we need to keep our mind. You know, many obstacles come, but you got to swim through very wisely, or otherwise you're going to get taken, right? It is just another anecdotal way of saying that we have to manage our mind skillfully. And to achieve this, when you talk about ethics and realizing these deep subjects that will create, these are wonderful questions, and these are very questions I also started with, like, what is this and why is that? And then what is this is what you gotta go through. So what you're doing is you're creating a conducive type of mind to learn these things, and you need to have some sort of discipline, avoid certain areas so you don't get those obstacles coming in the way. So my whole point was that you maneuver through the, like a fish nicely, quietly maneuvering through the ocean, quietly without being noticed. You know, when they make a mistake, they get caught, right? So that's all. It's just that, it's just another way of saying that we live through samsara. We are gaining this knowledge, how lucky we are that we are gaining this knowledge. And these questions are coming up, and that we need to maneuver through that. We need to really think it through in a logical way. So we start with the I, and then think about the phenomena, then think about how things are. And then these questions will come up. Then what about this? And then what about that? And then you search again, and you will come to an understanding. And after a couple of times, it starts to gel a little bit. And after you gel it, you meditate on it. And you may still have questions. At some point, it will like, wow, I think I got it. And that's when you will understand that yourself. Because we can go through words and we can go and look at it differently because our mind is not yet prepared to see exactly what they're saying. You try to express it the way you can, best way in the class, right? But it requires a little more understanding, and not everybody gets it, and some people get it, and some people may still get it intellectually, but they still are sincerely looking to understand it. And I think it's a wonderful thing, and that's exactly what we're asking to do. That I can give you the concept, I can teach you what Nagarjuna has said, I can tell you what it means based on the teachings, but then experiencing that comes through your own interrogation and what we just did a little bit, but that will take you further into it. You must challenge it, absolutely. I was so distraught in the first class when I was learning this. I still didn't feel like I got it till I went and sat down saying, no, explain to me. And then I've sat down for an hour or two and then says, okay, I think I can explain this now. That's how it happens little by little. And we have a long ways to go. Even Geshe-la says, I wish I could realize emptiness. So it's a tough process. But it's a wonderful thing.
Helen just says, thank you. And just to clarify also, Helen, if you don't know who Geshe-la is, he is our resident monk at Kadampa Center. So it's Geshe Gelug, and kind of the La at the end of Geshe is just a term of endearment. So you'll hear Hemant and others refer to our resident monk as Geshe-la, in case that was what you were also asking about.
Sorry about that. Yeah, it's true. So thank you. I just hope that this gives you a little purview, very fundamental purview of emptiness. Obviously, the journey now begins for you to go deeper into it and really question it. What else? Suraj, any questions? What's going on?
No questions. I just want to say thank you. It's very interesting.
Yes, thank you, Hemant. And thank you for everyone participating and sticking through a pretty dense subject. It was fantastic, Hemant. I felt like I gained a lot from this class, listening and being here.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you, Naga. Thank you, everybody.
We'll see you guys November 2nd, not next week.
This class is done.
Naga, this was the last of the Wisdom of Emptiness. We take a break next week, and then we'll pick up Introduction to Tantra on November 2nd.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you,
Hemant. Amira, thank you. Matt, thank you. John, thank you. Matt, Karen, thank you. Great questions. We should talk. Sandra, Alex, thank you so much for putting up with this.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you, Jenny.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye, Hemant.
Bye, Alex.